Welcome to Trapping Radio. This is your host, Clint Locklear. And I have to admit, guys, I've been a bad, bad boy. Friday, I could have did the podcast. It was beautiful. About 70 degrees. Wind wasn't that bad. So I went out on the boat. Maybe had one too many scotches. And in my brain, I'm going, that's okay. Because the next day, we had 5 inches of snow, 12 degrees, and 30 mile an hour winds within 14 hours of the beautiful weather. So I'm like, okay, so I'm going to do the show on the snow day, go have fun on, you know, when we get these beautiful days in March. And then me and my wife decided to go play around in the Jeep in the snow. So I'm doing it now. So I can't come up with some, convoluted whatever going on. It was just too beautiful to be spending time and not spending time with my wife Friday. And then we did it again Saturday. So here I am today, and I don't like doing any work on Sunday. So here we go. Before we get started, because we're getting back to trapping, but before we do, I just want y'all to think about something, because I've had a few comments from the last radio show about Ukraine. Guys, all I'm asking you to do is not pretend that you know what's going on over there. Everybody is lying. Everybody is lying. Ukraine is lying. Russia is lying. America's lying. China's lying. The UN is lying. Everybody's lying. And if you just look at the information you're getting that way, it'll drastically change your view. Because I want you to think about something. We just had the Pfizer reports come out where they knew. Pfizer knew they were going to destroy hundreds of thousands of people's lives with the vaccine. The court made them release this, not the government. Not the FDA, not the CDC. A judge had to make them release this because they knew it was going to screw them up. And I don't know if it's happened because I hadn't looked, but apparently they're expecting the blowback to be so bad, they want to protect themselves by coming off the stock exchange. Because what they did to people with these mRNA vaccines is unspeakable. Now, if you've took it and you're fine, I'm glad you're fine. But they lied to you. The government lied to you. The CDC lied to you. And the FDA lied to you. Now, it's the same people that within a 12-hour period forgot what the word COVID was and is now telling you that Ukraine is a democracy. Which it is not. That we're responsible to protect them, and we are not. War is big money. Big money. It's a way for politicians to funnel money through the context of war to all kind of buddies, and people they owe, and government contractors, and all kinds of different things make money that's not really about putting boots on the ground. And just in the last week, Putin, which I don't think is a very good guy, was saying we had biolabs in Ukraine. Conspiracy theories, misinformation, disinformation, propaganda. Well, it's came out that after all of these politicians that lied to you about the vaccines are lying to you about the biolabs in Ukraine. It looks like we have 30 of them over there under the Department of Defense. Now they're trying to say that it's not anything to do with really bad pathogens. So I guess like the military now is just trying to see how long you can keep ground beef out before you get poisoned, I guess. Really? So they've lied to you about the biolabs, which I'm going to be opening up front here, guys. Why are we doing this? Why is America, the light on the hill, funding biolabs in other countries? Didn't we just go through COVID? What are we planning on to do with these nasty things that we developed? We say we would never use them. What's the purpose of them? Let that sink in a second. It could be that that is a pretty nice place to release the next pandemic that Fauci and Bill Gates has already said is coming. The CDC has already said is coming after we get a bunch of cyber hacks that destroy the economy. Then there's going to be a new, they're telling you what they're going to do. And then when you look at Russia, you look at Ukraine. See, I'm not pro-Russia. I'm pro-Russian people and I'm pro-Ukrainian people. But I'm not pro-government. Where did the information go from and back to the servers and the voting booths during Trump's election? Ukraine. Where does Hunter Biden make all of this money for an energy company that he knows nothing about? Ukraine. What is one of the biggest child porn and child trafficking places in the world? Ukraine. If you look up politicians, Republican and Democrat, there's a whole bunch of them that have little Hunters running around that are getting paid millions of dollars in Ukraine. It is super corrupt. Should Russia invade another country? No. But let's not pretend that they're the angels. There's some bad crap and corruption that goes on in Ukraine. Because just from a military point of view, Russia is not going to want Ukraine to be a NATO member with missiles on their border. Now, if you think that, well, they should, well, we didn't when Russia was sending missiles to Cuba. We pretty much said we were going to blow them out of the water and start a nuclear war. So we weren't going to allow Russia to be on our border, but somehow we think they should let you in be on their border. With all of the corruption, and I will tell you that Putin, as close as I can figure, does not want the Great Reset, which is coming from America and the UN and everything like that. He's going to do something, and this is what he's picked to do. Because maybe a lot of that's being ran through Ukraine because they're so corrupt that anybody can buy them off. I'm not sure about that. But it's just something to think about. Like, I want you to get online and I want you to look up firefights in Desert Storm. I want you to look up firefights in Iraq and firefights in Afghanistan and Syria. What you're not going to see, guys, inside of the modern videos that are floating around, because I can't find them, are actually Russians and Ukraine fighting the way the news is telling you. Now, you'll see tanks blown up, and they'll say it's Ukraine. You'll see buildings getting blown up, and then people will, whatever they do online to track footage, and you'll find out it's from Beirut. You'll see news footage where they've got all these body bags laid out talking about how many deaths they are, and one of the body bags guys apparently runs out of oxygen and unzips his bag and starts to get out, and they try to put him back in for TV. The ghost of Kiev. All this stuff that we've heard that's been so pro-Ukrainian, you don't know if it's real or not, and neither do I. I can tell you a lot of the footage I'm seeing is not coming from Ukraine, at least in modern day times. That's pretty much what I was saying. Before we get on the war path, let's try to figure out what's actually going on first. That's all I'm going to say about that. All right, guys, we've got amazing, amazing sponsors for Trapping Radio. We're going to run through them pretty quickly, but the same goes for all of them. They all sell trapping supplies. They have great service departments. They don't leave you holding, waiting on your order for months. Most of the time when you order from any of my sponsors, it goes out the door within 24 hours. They do the best they can on packaging the boxes up so it gets there unbroken. And they treat you the way you should be treated. That's what our sponsors do. F&T Fur Harvesters, everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Funky Trap Tags and Supplies. Full line of trapping supplies, even goes into more wildlife and fishing. Great predator call selection. Dunlap Lures makes a hell of a lure. Been doing it for a long time. He's a good friend of mine, and I know he puts a lot of pride, and he's just not shoving stuff in bottles just to try to make a quick sale. Because when I see Jeff trap, he's always using his own stuff, just like I do. You don't see that a lot with other lure makers. Because when the catch is on the line, they're going to use what's best. And we have Oki Cable and Trap out of Oklahoma. Jeb's got a full trapping supply line. A lot of times he buys fur, he's selling meat, he's got buckets, he's got all kind of stuff. Really good guy to deal with. You can get all of their information down in the show notes. All right, let's get back to Beaver. This is just continuing back to the basics series, where we're talking about different things that is not so high performance based, but it's like anything in life. I've been watching UT boys basketball. They just won the SEC champion last night. I never really watched college basketball, but I played when I was in high school we went to state 2 out of 3 times with 2 different high schools. I did personally. I was lucky enough to have 2 tremendous coaches. One was Coach Poe, one was Coach Adduck down at Glenwood in Alabama. They beat the basics into us. They beat discipline into us. And then you could add on to that to put a show on, to have some fun, and different things like that. Now, the interesting thing is, all 4 years of high school that I played basketball, I had coaches that taught the basics. not this teach them and, okay, let's go run the floor. I'm talking every practice, every game. So when we played other teams that were more, and I'm going to put this in just in my vernacular because there's probably a term for this, but more street ballish, run and gun, lots of three-pointers, lots of trying to make the crowd go ooh and ah. You know what happened when we played those teams? Most of the time, unless their talent was just like, you know, seniors in college, we destroyed them with discipline. And when I used to go into more of the black neighborhoods and hustle black people for basketball, that's how I beat them when they were faster, could jump higher, and could do things with their bodies I could not do. Because I'd almost get every single rebound because street ballers don't block out. Street ballers don't protect the ball. Street ballers don't have pockets that they shoot from on a regular basis, so it's like really big muscle memory. They don't really know how to go to the rim super strong because they haven't practiced it. They're more worried about the looks. That's how I beat, sometimes, grown men in high school and took their money was because of basics. Now, yeah, I could do some fancy stuff, but the basics is what really, really matter. And that's what we're doing on this series. So we've talked a little bit about Beaver. And just some things that I want to cover today is we'll talk a little bit more about footholds. When it comes to hooking up your footholds, guys, there's several ways to do this. They all work. Some of them are more productive. Some of them are more speed. Some of them are more about keeping the beaver out of sight. Some of them take a lot more work than others. See, when I first started beaver trapping, I did what everybody else did. You go get a bunch of bags, sandbags or tie plates and wheel drums and fur sacks, and you carry number 9 wire or number 11 wire out with you, which is getting tangled on everything. And then you're going to fill that bag up, and then you're going to hook the wire to the bag with your trap with a slide lock where it's going to go down and not back up. You're going to throw that bad boy out in the water, and you're going to put your beaver set in. It works. Now, depending on where you're at and what your soil type is and whether you have rocks or not, you can have some issues with this, because if you're in more of a wooded area with loamy type soil, no matter how much you put in that bag, a beaver's going to pull it around. And sometimes it works perfectly. That's just trapping. And then I got into, from Craig O'Gorman, watching, I don't know if I watched it, I think it was a video, on his beaver, and he was using long chains, 10, 15 foot chains, big traps, teeth if legal, laminated, so you know nothing sharp is hitting the front foot of a beaver if you catch one. And he went up with a T-bar, and he could put a set in as fast as a coon set. I mean a fast coon set. So he could put these traps in extremely fast. And at the time, I was catching a lot of beavers, so I'm like, hey, I like this. Now, this is where, when you watch DVD, guys, you got to pay attention of what you're watching and where you trap at, because there's some of this is not the same. You go out to Montana, and you have mostly lots of current, mostly unobstructive water, which is, and think about just a fast moving trout stream. And then I want you to think of what a beaver swamp looks like. You got saplings growing up and everything's on the bank and out in the water and stumps and fell over trees and stuff like that. So when I went to using the long chain and I had big water, it worked beautifully. Like on the Tennessee River or the Sequatchie River or even big ponds. Because the beaver would take the chain that would I put a tie plate, if it's gonna, you know, drop off sometimes two tie plates, the beaver would literally take the weight out for me and drowned. And I had a high success rate. And then I was into places where I had a lot of saplings, I had a lot of bushes out in the water and stumps and knocked down trees and different things like that. And I would get into issues where, you know, 10 foot out in the water, this chain would get wrapped up around something and the water's over my head. And I had some pretty cold times getting that son of a gun loose. So I started shortening up the chain and I would just let the beaver go. If there was a big drop off, I'd put a tie plate. If there wasn't, I was just like a coyote. I was just putting them on a chain and letting them make a circle. Really, really liked it. And I did that for years. The years that I did, you know, as over 1,000 beaver, that was pretty much my setup. About a 6-7 foot chain, a great big number 5. This was before TS-85s or MB-750. Or CDR, and if they didn't come laminated, I laminated them. I double laminated some of them. And it worked beautifully. So that was cool. Well, then this guy showed up from Minnesota with what he called carbon rod slide rods. And I bought a bunch of them. And I still use them to this day. That was a game changer. Because they weren't heavy like rebar, because I've done that, and the weight was just so aggravating, so I didn't want to continue doing that. But I used the carbon rods. And most places, I could shove it, I could stand on the bank, wouldn't even need hip boots, just pretty much, you know, muck boots. I could put in a set, I could drive the pole into the bottom of the mud, come up to the top, stake it in with a T-bar, make sure the lock was going the right way, everything's going the right way, and then put the set in, caster mount, blind set, whatever I was doing. And that was so positive of a drowner, I kind of got away with using the chains. So whenever you read something I've wrote or you've watched something I've done, this has been a journey for me 30 years. And every time I was doing something new, I thought this was the ticket. I don't know what can beat a slide rod. Now, I haven't seen that guy in years. Sell them. He used to come to the Nationals, actually put them together in front of you. But if you ever see Jeff Haggerty at a show, J3, he's now making them, and he's making some really other cool products out of the carbon, but he's got these slide rods, and I've watched him use him because him and Jeff came down to Arkansas a couple years ago. Now, I've got plenty of the other, but if I ever need them, I'm going to Jeff. I still have about a dozen of my big traps on chain. Because where I live in Tennessee, sometimes there's no dirt under, it's just rock. And that doesn't work very well with that. But most of the time, I can find somewhere to shove that thing in. All that's just securing the trap and trying to drown the beaver, or choosing not to drown the beaver by using modified traps. That's pretty basic. You've got the body grips, which we've talked about, camouflaging, all that type stuff. That's a lot more simple. But I promise you, you will outcatch beaver in a foothold. Once you get the skill set, then you will, with a body grip, trying to get them to come through it where it's half in, half out of the water. Doesn't mean they're square shy, they just don't like it. But the footholds, the way that I've modified my trap, which I think is very basic, I want you to think about something. The bigger trap that you can use has a function two different ways for beaver. Function one is they've got a really big back foot. And you want to have a trap big enough their foot to be inside of the jaws. That should be common sense to anybody that looks at a beaver and goes out and sets beaver traps. Because even if you set for front foot, sometimes you still catch them by the back foot. The other modification, or the other thing that I look at beaver, which I think is super important, is laminating the trap. If you're doing strictly drowning sets, it's not as important. But if anything goes wrong on a non-laminated trap for beaver, you've got a certain percentage of trouble that you're going to be seeing. I promise you that. One easy way to correct that before it ever happens is to laminate that trap. And I want to use 1/4-inch lamination. That with the jaw is going to equal most of the time somewhere around 3/8. Think about the thickness of a 3/8-inch T-bar or a stake. I don't want sharp corners. And I want the trap strong enough that the beaver cannot slide back and forth. The other reason for the big trap, guys, that I think is important is when you do catch beaver by the front foot, the weakest part on that beaver is his wrist. That's why when you go to take the front foot off a beaver, you can pretty much just cut the skin and break it, and with a slice, the front foot is off. If you skin beaver, you know that. So why would you set yourself up to grab a beaver with a lower jaw spread trap that's going to hit him at the weakest point of his leg? Can you catch him in 2s and 3s and 4s? Yes. Can you hold him? Yes. But is it really optimal? And I say no. See, when I put pan tension for a front foot catch, 2 or 3 pounds, on a beaver trap, and the beaver pushes that pan down with that force, those big old traps are nowhere for the most part. Sometimes it is, but it's not very common, around the wrist. You're catching them way up on the leg. That bone is much bigger, much denser, much harder to break. So I want to stay away from the weakest point, which is the wrist, by using a big enough trap to get above the danger zone. That's where the 750s and the, if you can still get them, CDRs and the Dukes and the Bridgers and the TS-85s And I think there's some new ones on the market. I think No BS has got a 7.5-inch trap now, and somebody else does too. But try to get something big enough so you're not having that issue. That's just basic. Stay out of trouble before trouble finds you. That's like Sansun Otter War. You can win that battle without having to fight. Now, footholds are a lot more... See, there's a lot more weight to set a foothold than most people think about. Let's say you're coming up to a stream and it's got rapids in it and it's only 2 or 3 inches deep. Well, you can look at the water most of the time with some experience, move some rocks or, you know, drag a log down or something like that, kind of get the beaver to go where you want him to, and you can blind set in 2 or 3 inches of water and catch a beaver, no problem, because they've got to walk. They're no different than a coon. They're no different than a coyote. They're no different than a fox at that point. So don't treat them any different. If they're walking, they got 4 legs and they got to walk. That's one of my favorite sets to do. It's death on otter and it's death on beaver. Now we have the traditional type sets. Castor mounds. Pull up the mud, throw the lure down, slick her up. Go for your front foot or your back foot. That's a very common style set for beaver with a foothold. Now, the only other basic thing I'm going to say about that, because that's one that's just been, I don't want to spend a lot of time because it's been just overly talked about, is if you've got current, you want to set the trap on the down current side. Because that's how a beaver is going to come up to the set. He's not going to come in on a straight line because the current's going to push him off of it. Most of the time, the beaver will go down past it. For one, the lure's going to be following that water current, and that's when he's going to smell it. But he's going to come in at an angle on the down current side. If you put it on the upside, a lot of times you're not even close to where the beaver's actually going to be. If you're in stagnant, still water, it doesn't matter. But if you're in current, always set it on the down current side. Because I know, personally, and most trappers have habits. And that habit is that you set left or right. You can watch coyote trappers, fox trappers, coon trappers. It doesn't make any difference. You have a habit, like for coyotes, if I'm doing a standard set, my trap is almost always going to be on the right. But I've seen people where it's always on the left or it's always in the center. That's just a habit of us. And on dirt, you're not dealing with current pushing something that's floating. So just keep that in mind. I've had times where I've been in beaver swamps where the water gets a little bit high and all of their trails have like 2 inches of water in them. And you'll get that for 4 or 5 days, the water goes down. I just plop a trap in that thing, push it down in the mud, and blind set. Not something you normally see people doing. If there's structure and the ground is there where I can blind set a beaver where the trap, you know, is 2 inches to 5 or 6 inches deep, I can just smear a good beaver lure on a stump, on a tree, on a bridge embankment, rock, whatever, just like a flat set for a coyote. And I do that type of set a lot. Another favorite of mine with a foothold is if you look at a lot of dams, right up on the top water side, the deep water side, it's not that deep, you know, like right off of where the dam's at. if there's any trees or bushes or logs, even if you've got to move something or take a bunch of river cane or something and shove it down in and just give them about 18 inches, you could break a little hole on both sides. They're going to go fix it. They're going to go through the shortest route, which is right over your trap. You could do lure. Your imagination with a foothold is pretty wide open. I've caught beaver on logs where I'll actually chop the end out so the trap's under the water a little bit and put the beaver lure up on the log. Beaver have no problem going to get that lure. A lot of people do that for muskrats. It's just a bigger version. Is all that is. A lot of the banks that you come to, if you sit around and watch beaver, we've all seen the beaver swimming out and they're, 15, 20 feet away from the bank and they're swimming around and this, that, and the other. Beaver also have a tendency to swim really close to high banks. And if you look the way the high banks are formed, at least here on the Tennessee River, you've got barges and boats and everything, and that water smacking that ground, and it's making it fall off a little bit at a time. And right up next to that is, 2 inches, an inch, 6 inches deep. And I can nestle a trap in there, put beaver lure up on the high bank, and catch beaver. What I want you to think about is don't be so locked in to how you catch beaver. It's not mystical. It's using what you have to your advantage. So instead of having to go out with shovels and picks and mattocks and work yourself like a construction worker, look around and go, what do I have where these beaver are at that I can catch him with a whole lot less energy? That's my principle on everything. Be the laziest trapper you can be and still be productive. Footholds are pretty simple. Now, if you're stuck in a state where you can't use big traps, you definitely want to go to more exaggerated front foot catches. I did an experiment years ago because I heard Johnny Thorpe talking about catching beaver in number 2 coal springs. So for a month, that's all I did was take number 2 coal springs. And memory serves me, those traps were Bridger square jaw number 2s, and Montana's and the original version. Oh shoot. Not Northwoods, the other one. But they look the same. It's just kind of a knockoff of what that was. And what I learned with that is I used 2 little traps hooked together. It upped my percentage for front foot catches, but I was setting those traps extremely shallow. And I would have to modify the bank a little bit more and stuff to try to control the situation a little bit more, but they did work. And the reason I'm saying this is, there's a lot of guys that's going to be in situations that don't have either any big beaver traps or very few beaver traps. And if you've got a situation to catch beaver, go ahead and set the smaller ones, but you will have some snap-offs. And I cannot tell from any of the snap-offs of those little traps that it ever caused beaver to be shy. I don't even think they realized anything was really happening. I've seen big beaver traps on night vision footage, and the beaver snaps a trap off, and it just kind of like, boof, his belly, and he just kind of looks around like, what the hell was that? And he doesn't seem to panic. He doesn't seem to get upset. He doesn't seem to pay any attention. Now, you start taking feet and toes off a beaver, that's a different story. So don't be afraid to use smaller traps, but you want to go, but if you've got the option, guys, go with the biggest ones you can get your hands on that's legal. You're just going to plain catch more beaver. Now I want to break this down into real quickly about body grips. We've talked about those, but here's something that you need to keep in mind. If you're trapping somewhere where you have a lot of competition, or you're trapping somewhere after somebody else has trapped the beaver. Now, they may be a premier beaver trapper, and you have nothing to worry about, but you don't know that. Or you could have a bunch of guys that are just trying to figure out how, and they've smacked a bunch of beavers and fired off a bunch of 330s, and they've done a bunch of caster mound sets, and it goes dead because the beaver's like, yeah, that ain't a good idea. You don't know. But if I'm going on public type ground and I see any evidence or hear of any evidence that someone else is trapped there, the way I set those traps is very different. Now, for some of you in some of the states that you live in, this has got to be your normal style of setting because of your law. See, here in Tennessee, the trap just has to touch the water. Some places, the body grip has to be half in, half out of the water. There's states where you can set it on dry land. And that's a different ball game right there. But if you've got competition, and it's say you're in Tennessee, or you're half in, half out of the water state, and you know that there's been other people trapping, you need to make sure that that trap is totally submerged. And you will definitely catch the beaver. There's a few tricks on doing this that are very helpful if you've been around people that's just read a couple of books and went out and tried to follow it. The first one that I can tell you from all the years I've done beaver trapping is sometimes the way people do the very obvious dive pole over the trap is an alert to a beaver. I have no doubt about that in my mind. But you can make it look natural. See, what most people do, they're going to move that trap out till it's in, 12 inches of water. They're going to stake it, they're going to tie it off, and they're going to go get a straight stick, and then they're going to float that right over the trap and put a couple of sticks where they're sticking up in the air to hold it in place. Now, to a beaver that doesn't have any pressure whatsoever, you're fine. But if he's had pressure, you could not be fine. So when you look at that, because if you've done any amount of beaver trapping in different places around other people, do you know what stands out the most? Just walking down a creek or driving down a road and you look over a bridge, is that very unnatural, by itself, floating stick that's in a beaver's way. You'll notice that before you notice the top of the jaws of the trap or the footprints on the bank or anything like that, or you smell a lure. It's that straight stick, usually pulled off a beaver dam. It's just floating there with no rhyme or reason except it's completely parallel to the bank. So how do we compensate for that? One is you don't make it look like that. Okay, let's think about this. A beaver knows where he's going. So if you cut something that has limbs and you put it off on, say, like a 45 degree angle and you drop that thing in the water, so you still have the trap that's not doesn't have limbs and stuff in it in the runway. Now it looks just like every other limb that fell in the water. You don't have hardly any problems with that whatsoever. If you're going to have to put sticks in to hold it in place, you don't do the you know, we got the stick with two sticks sticking the foot out of the water on each side holding it in place. Go and push them in the ground enough so they're barely under the water so they're not so noticeable. Or you could just use a small piece of wire with one and wire it up. But if you're around a lot of competition, you may have to be a little more creative on what you do with your dive poles. You can put two or three out at the same time where they kind of drop in the same direction. What you're wanting it to do is if you look up and down that bank and you turn back and look at yours, it just looks like something else has fell off the bank. And you'll have a lot less problems. And I definitely think this is true with even more so with otter. Does it take a little bit more time? Yes. But I'd rather catch the beaver. It's just looking at things in more of a natural setting. What you don't want, even though you can get away with it a lot of times with beaver, is for a non-trapper to come up to a situation and go, "That's strange. That doesn't look right. What's going on?" And they start fishing around. They find your trap. They think it's been there since the mountain men. You know, they're going to go brag to their buddies. Or you've got a trap thief. I guarantee you a trap thief or beaver can see that single dive pole going 75 miles an hour in the fog. So just think about what you're doing when you're putting your things out. So if I'm around competition, I always want to have the trap underwater. I always want to have a natural dive pole where it's more like just a tree fell on it. Or a bigger log that you can take out way past it and on both sides, and I never really want it straight. I want it more of an angle because it doesn't matter to the beaver. That's what I like to do with that. And I'm going to give you, because there's been some books written about this, I show this in my otter video. If you're on a creek and you know beaver going up and down this creek, think about what your objective is if you're going to be using a body grip trap. It's to get it to go through the trap. That's the main thing. Get it to go through the trap. Now, if you're on a bunch of drainage ditches and dredge ditches, there's nothing in it. It could be 6 foot wide. It could be 4 foot wide. It could be 12 foot wide. One of the coolest things that I started doing when I was really going after otter, which showed me how much the beaver, I actually had to figure out ways to set it for otter to try not to catch so many beaver, is I would run a fence, and by fence, I mean the cheapest metal fence of any kind that I could find. You know, I'd get a roll of it 5 feet tall. I'd throw it in the back of the truck. I'd go down to the creek. I'd put a stake on one end, like going up the bank, so one side's completely out of the water, completely blocked it off. And then I would put that fence in on the other side so there would only be one opening on the deeper side. Now, do you want to do this all the time? Hell no. But on those places, you got a lot of beaver and there's no structure and you really can't see where they're coming up on the bank. And maybe your lure sets aren't producing the way they should. Dude, this will nail Beaver. It's nothing but a fence with an opening on the deeper side that's just big enough for the trap. Now, if that is over the height of the trap, well, then you can just float a bunch of grass and brush and sticks up against it, and you got your dive pole. When you come back, collect your beaver. That's an extremely basic way anybody can go out and catch beaver. You know, with you're talking body grips, yeah, you got your crossovers. Well, rule number one, it goes on the bottom side of the dam in the water. Don't put a body grip on the top side. It stands out like a sore thumb, and beaver go around it a lot of times. Now, if there's a bunch of, I was going to say garbage, but that's not the true term. If it's a dam that's just got sticks sticking everywhere and you can hide that body grip on the top side, sure, knock yourself out. But you want the trap to be on the bottom side of the dam. You want them committed when they're going down through the crossover and they're going to get caught. One of the things that I've seen over and over, I've seen people talk about it in books. I've talked to people that do this on their lines. And if you're one of these people, please don't be mad at me about what I'm getting ready to say. But I am going to give what I would consider a no-no when it comes to beaver trapping. You do not kick a hole in a beaver dam and stick a 330 in it. If you want to educate beavers, that's how you do it. And when there's a lot of these guys that run around the country that work for pest control companies that are forced to be trappers, and most of them don't even want to be, that's kind of like the go-to. You kick a hole in a beaver dam, you stick a 330 in it, and you think you've got the world licked. No, you've got educated beaver, and they're going to snap that trap off 9 out of 10 or 19 out of 20 times. Because when a beaver is going to fix that dam, he's going to start pushing sticks and mud. And that's going to hit the trigger before the beaver's in the trap. Because he's not going through the trap, he's going to push stuff up against the trap. And a lot of times you're going to come back and your trap's just going to be completely covered with mud and still set. That is a no-no to do with beavers. I know there's a lot of guys that do it, and I know there's been a lot of beavers trapped that way, but there's probably been 100 times more that weren't. That's someone that doesn't understand the natural habits of a beaver to do that. Okay, I want to quickly go into snaring, because we're just talking basics here. Snaring beaver is something that anybody within a couple of days can become very proficient at. There's a negative side to snaring, as it destroys the location. Now, if you got short enough snares and you're going to run them on a drowning pole, or you're going to run a cable far enough away from that for the caught beaver not to disturb the site, it's not as bad. But if you've got a good trail and you put a snare on that trail, you're going to catch that beaver, and it's going to take a couple of weeks for the other beaver to start using it again because of all the commotion, all the smell, everything going on, and it's destroyed. It doesn't mean it's wrong. It just means you need to understand that there's long-term consequences to what you're doing. But snaring a beaver is super easy. And I just want to give some pointers on this. First is the snare. In my opinion, based on a lot of experience, a 5/64 1x19 snare for beaver that you can open up to no bigger than 11 inches. I don't even care what type of lock you put on there. Then you have a swivel, a barrel swivel, a trap swivel, a regular snare swivel, which is not the best, but it's better than nothing. And then you put the piece of cable, which can be 7x7 or whatever the cheapest is, to stake it off or to put it on a kill pole. That can be 7x7, it doesn't matter. But the part that touches the beaver, you're gonna hold way more beaver in a 5/64 1x19 loaded snare than you will in 7x7 teardropped. If you're only a 7x7 guy, don't get mad at me. I'm just telling you what I've seen repeatedly over the years. It makes a huge difference. And I think the way the prices are right now, you can actually get 1x19 cheaper than you can get 7x7. So it shouldn't even be an issue at this point. I want the snare depending on the size of the beaver. Now, I want to give you a caveat for this. You go down to Louisiana and get in those rivers with a boat where people are not trapping and haven't really trapped those beavers in decades, the average size of those beaver are gonna be 45 to 65 pounds. That's like a dog. You've got to have a bigger loop. And when I get in those situations, I open them up to 11 inch loop. You need it. Because a 9-inch loop, which would I consider 9.5 inches standard beaver size, is just not big enough because those beaver are so big. Now, if you're up north and the beaver get hit a lot under ice and open water in spring, you're not going to have the size of beaver that you're going to see in places like I'm talking about, Louisiana, Mississippi, Florida, Arkansas. You're just not going to see that. It is a huge difference. I don't know if you can snare in somewhere like Minnesota. You're not going to have that type beaver. Now, you will catch some that are that big, but I'm talking in certain places of the country that don't get a lot of trapping like that. The average beaver is 50 to 60 pounds. Now, where I live in Tennessee, I don't have that issue. When I was in North Carolina, I didn't have that issue. But just be aware, like if you come up to all your snares and they're just knocked over, snare supports are knocked over, you're dealing with hogs. Not hogs like you eat, but I mean hog beaver. But the average size that 99% of the people listening to this show, a 9 to 9.5 inch loop, an inch and a half off the ground, is going to be about the perfect beaver size. You'll still catch big beaver, but you'll also catch all those 25, 30, 40 pounders too, which is going to be the majority of what you're actually going after because that's the size of the beaver that you have. I've caught an 82 pound beaver in Tennessee in one of the, I think they're 10 by 12 Savages. Years ago, thing was a monster. But that is like, that's been once in a lifetime. So I'm not going to set for the once in a lifetime. I'm going to set for the average. If you can, when you're setting beaver snares, set them in a way to get the snare away from as much saplings and stuff like that as you can. That can cause you some issues. So if you've got a way to move it up or down the trail a little bit to get away from that, you're better off. But snaring is super simple. You see a beaver trail, you stake the snare, you open it up to 9 to 9.5 inches, inch and a half off the ground, and you walk away. Now, the last thing I'm going to say before we close on beaver snares, because this will be it on beaver. Part of the reason you want to use 1x19 cable is you can load it. And there's videos on YouTube and demos, and all kinds of, finding that type of information is not as hard as it used to be. But if you ever see the teachers of the night with the beaver, you're going to see what happens when a beaver comes up to a snare. It was set about 6 inches out of the water, back on the land side, very loosely blocked down, and the beaver stopped in front of the snare, and he took his nose and he went all the way around the snare trying to figure out if it was a threat or what it was. The beaver knew it was out of place. So when you hear people say that they just think it's a vine, that's BS. They know something's wrong. Now, in their little brain, they're going to have to figure out whether to go forward or not. And you'll watch the beaver kind of shuffle its back feet while his little pea brain's trying to figure out what he wants to do. And he steps through the snare very gently. And as soon as he feels that thing give a little bit, he starts backing back up. The loaded snare, just with the pressure of his guard hairs, fired and caught the beaver. So the beaver was actually caught trying to come back out of the snare after he made the decision to go through the snare. I'm not saying they're all that way, but it wasn't the bulldozer effect that I hear people talk about how they think beaver go through snares. Beaver are actually pretty cautious animals. They're prey. They have to be. The dumb ones have already been eaten. And then the smarter ones breed. So by having a loaded snare, and if you don't know what that means you can put a bend in 1x19, which is near impossible to do of any efficiency on a 7x7. So the cable itself is putting pressure on the lock, but not enough to fire the snare. But when something moves that snare and it takes a little bit of pressure off of the top cable where the lock's at, it actually slams shut about 50% of the way, which means you've caught your beaver. Can you go out and catch a bunch of beaver without loaded snares? Yes. But you will catch way more in a loaded snare. So I hope this helped anybody that's looking to go beaver trapping without getting crazy in all of the trapping with your hair on fire techniques. If you're new to beaver trapping, just go. Have fun. Pay attention. Enjoy being out in the woods. Enjoy the process. Don't beat yourself up if you have a miss. And for goodness sake, if you have a miss, don't think you've got the smartest beaver in the world. You probably don't. It's still a rodent. Worry about catching a beaver. And then worry about catching the next beaver. If you're starting out, don't try to go out and catch 100 beaver until you've caught 99 beaver. You'll be way happier, and you'll probably learn a whole lot more. See, everything we do when we're out in the woods should be about observation and learning. But if you've got preconceived biases of what does and doesn't work, in how you set and how you don't set, you're going to lock yourself into a bubble, and you're not going to see everything outside of the bubble that's there for you to take advantage of. Now, beaver trapping is not hard. It's just a lot of hard work because they're heavy. It's muddy. You got to deal with a lot of different issues. But it's not hard. It's actually quite simple. Go have fun. Try a backstrap on the smoker. If you'll do that, you will see beaver in a whole different light. Because smoked backstraps or smoked ham, the hams off a beaver, or you take the hams and cook them like a Mississippi pot roast, which you can look up online, you will be tickled to death about what your taste buds are tasting. All right, guys, and I will see y'all next time.